Oh, this is the same kind of mic on my band.
Hello. I do want a microphone. Okay. I can project, but I also love attention. Hello. It is a dark and stormy night. You are here. I am Elizabeth. Welcome to Gibson's Bookstore. You are not here to see me. You are here to see Josh and perhaps Ryan, our queen of scream here. We are very excited for this event. We got this event because Ryan has no chill on Twitter. And Ryan makes friends with very cool people. And sometimes that pans out into very cool events. So we are very pleased to have this event here tonight. Please join me in welcoming Josh Mallerman for Daphne.
Thanks, everyone.
Oh my God, hi Josh.
Hey. Wait, before you start, okay. I think I want to tell you I came bearing gifts.
Oh my
Yay.
God.
So, I brought you a Sam Hatton varsity jacket.
Oh my God.
There's only two of these in existence, the other one's in my office.
I'm gonna wear this the whole event.
And I brought you a UK version of Daphne. I like it because it's like big. And the font's a little different.
I like it.
But I think I may hold on to it during this.
That's fair.
In case I have to look Absolutely. Anything up. But this is yours.
Oh my God.
I'm holding your book.
Goodness. Will That's we amazing. Get our gifts on the way out? How's that going to work?
Yes. It's actually really warm, so I'm going to take it off.
But yeah, no kidding, right? I know, that's like a sauna, really like a traveling sauna.
All right, hold on. Let's dramatically.
Here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so I have a story.
Well, this
that Josh doesn't know this story, but so I had this revelation recently about how I became a fan of horror novels, because I feel like we all have that, like, that moment we became a fan of horror novels. All right, so back up. I've been at Gibson's. Can you all hear me, by the way?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I've been at Gibson's for 10 years.
Awesome.
I know, right?
10 years.
That's cool. How did that happen? But I was not always the queen of scream, and if you knew me 10 years ago, I was the YA specialist. I was over there recommending all of the books to teenagers, and adults who read YA. And, but I've always been spooky, and I've always done my, like, 31 Nights of Halloween, and, you know, I've always been into horror movies. And I had this coworker who we would chat horror all the time, and he came in one day, and this was, like, 9 years ago. And he was like, he had this arc of a horror novel that was coming out in like a year. He was like, okay, I just read this book, and I know it's not what you normally read, but I really need to talk to someone about it, so you have to read this. Oh, okay. So I brought it home and read it, because when a bookseller tells you to read a book, you have to read the book. That's the rule. I'm making eye contact with all of you. So I read the book, and he was right. I loved it, and we chatted about it, and we kind of began this thing where we would read horror novels, and it opened up this thing in my brain where I was like, oh my God, horror is a thing. I forgot horror was a thing.
Oh, this is amazing.
Right? And so, like, years go by, and I read more and more horror, and eventually I am affectionately dubbed the Queen of Scream at Gibson's, because I only read horror. and now I'm, you know, the person that people come in asking for, and my coworkers come find me even on break to be like, someone wants a spooky book, help. But what's fun, I was organizing my books the other day, and I found the arc that my coworker gave me all those years ago.
Wow.
Anybody heard of Bird Box?
Yes.
No.
Yeah. This was my horror awakening book.
That's amazing. That's amazing. But that, you know what's weird to me about that is that I've always felt like Bird Box was a straight shot. Like every now and then I like to write what I would consider like a fastball,
yeah.
Right? And I feel like Daphne is that as well.
Yeah.
But Bird Box felt like it's straight down the middle. Like, this is like just a straight black and white almost horror story. And then my agent, I got her with Bird Box. And she was like, this isn't really like a horror story. This is like a thriller, this or that. And I'm like, no. No, this is squarely horror, you know? But then HarperCollins like presented it as like a thriller and this too in sort of a way, and I'm like, no. But then they're like, oh no, there's a wider audience. I'm like, okay, but like horror is home.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be in that, not in that scene, but in that realm or something.
Yeah. Because there's very few genres more passionate than horror. Like,
or
horror
more exciting, or more interesting, or more colorful.
Yeah.
Or more imaginative, or more elastic, or cooler.
And horror fans are just the best fans. We know this. This is just scientific fact. We know this. Okay, so let's talk about Daphne.
Okay.
Who here has read it, by the way?
Oh, no, I just started.
No spoilers, I promise. No spoilers. I'm just curious. I know Jennifer's read it.
I
don't. Okay, cool. So let's do the no spoilery, give us the elevator pitch.
All right, this is how it ends. I know you're just asking like what the book's about, but it's interesting to me because I feel like with a lot of books and songs, it's like not the author's place to say what it's actually about. Mm-hmm. So with Bird Box, somebody might be like, is this about the madness of the world? And you look outside, I'm like, I don't know, what do you think? But with Daphne, it is 100% about anxiety.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. If someone said, is this about something else? I'd be like, no, it's about anxiety. So it's a 7-foot, denim-clad mad woman ghost who smells of the bar. I feel like I'm describing myself. I really just realized that I'm Daphne.
A little less murdery.
And she has a predilection for the high school girls basketball team, and she's going after them one by one. And so Kit Lamb, the star of the team, or I don't know if she's the star, but she's on the team, and she struggles with anxiety, and Daphne is essentially a panic attack. The more Kit thinks about her, the closer she gets, the bigger she gets, the closer she gets. And so that's the nuts and bolts of it. I feel like I need some water or something.
Yeah, right behind you on the shelf. And what's interesting about Daphne, and I screamed at you about this right after I finished it, is that it's about anxiety, but also like the physical book itself, like the structure of the book is a panic attack. Spirals. And how conscious of that were you?
That's what I mean the whole time. There wasn't a sense of, again, with Bird Box, it was like, oh, this should happen next. And I don't know why, and I don't care why, it just feels right. This one was like, no. Now what happens next in this experience?
Yeah.
So fully aware of that the whole time. Fully aware of the subtext the whole time. But if that's what it actually is about, I guess it's not subtext, right?
Yeah.
Daphne is about anxiety, and Daphne is anxiety. Yeah.
Yeah. And you struggle with anxiety.
I mean.
And I struggle with anxiety. I think a lot of us struggle with anxiety. So this is an important book.
I feel like I see people like online that have it like way worse.
Yeah.
Like their description of it, I'm like, holy cow. But in a general sense, yeah, I mean, I was scared on the way here, you know what I mean? And like,
I'm terrified.
I'm scared right now. And
very
no.
Scary.
But God, there's so much to say about this subject, isn't there?
Yeah.
That, like, for example, and something that's talked about in the afterword, Allison is my fiance, and Allison, one time during a particularly rough patch, she asked me, she's like, have you ever tried timing one of these episodes? And I was like, timing one of these? Like, that sounds insane. Who's going to, like, look at their watch during, you know? Like, oh, well, it's 7:01 when I started freaking out. And it's 7:02 and it feels like an hour has gone by.
Great.
Thanks, Allison. So I did it. I timed an episode, and it was about 7 minutes. And, like, when it started to fade. And then the next one that came, I timed it, and it was about 7 minutes. The next one that came was about 7 minutes. So it's like the nature of the sufferer that you, just because, like, okay, I've never heard of somebody getting through one episode because they got through the last one.
Right.
No, you believe each one.
Yeah.
Like, this is the most scared I've ever been.
Yeah.
Right. But what Allison did was gave me this, like, numerical, like, value to it,
mm-hmm.
where I was like, I can get through 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed everything for me. Isn't that awesome?
I like that.
Yeah, I still like thank her about it today. And she's like the most fearless person I know. So she's like, oh yeah, no. Yeah. I feel like she doesn't even believe that I go through this. You know? Because it's like invisible. Oh my God, freaking out. She's like, maybe.
Prove it.
Yeah, anyway, we gotta do this.
She's full of good advice. She's the one who taught me the thing about covering your ears during a scary scene.
Yeah.
And I do that all the time now. Do you guys know about this? Mm-hmm. So if you're watching a horror movie and there's something like gory or scary or something happening on the scene, cover your ears, not your eyes.
Yeah, because we were watching The Nun. And I was hiding behind Allison, and she goes, no, just plug your ears. And I was like, what the, no. And then I did it, and I was like, oh my God, it's just a bunch of people in makeup jumping out at each other.
Yeah, it just takes you out of
everything.
It just enough.
But that's also okay. What's the right phrase for that? Underscore is how awesome the horror soundtrack is.
Oh, yeah.
And the horror sound design and all that, yeah.
Yeah. I'm totally going to jump from that. Because you're a musician, would you ever consider doing like horror scoring?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I don't know what that means, or like if I was asked to do it, I'd be horrified. You know, I'd be like, I would say yes.
Yeah.
And then be like, oh my God, what do I do? You know, do I get my band together? Do I use a keyboard? What do I do? But I would love to do that though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I figure. I mean, if I ever direct a movie or something like that, I should just give it a go. And if it sucks, then get someone else or something.
Yeah. Can I brag about your band for a minute?
Yeah.
Can we talk about your band for a minute? Okay. Okay. So how many of you know Josh's band? Anyone? Like one person? Yeah. Okay. So this is gonna be fun. How many of you know the show Shameless? You know the theme song to Shameless?
That's me and my best friends.
That's this guy.
Yeah.
That's this guy.
Yeah.
And I discovered. So it's called The High Strung. I discovered your band right after your new album came out, Hannah. And
That really?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
And went down a huge rabbit hole, and now it's all I listen to. So, thank you. Thank you for that.
Some people are like, can't reckon, and I feel like you and I have a similar take on this or something, but some people can't reconcile the band is like upbeat, well, in a general sense, like poppier or something, and then writing horror novels. How do you reconcile these two together?
And those people have not listened to the lyrics.
Well, right, there's that, for sure. And then also, I feel like rock and roll and horror are coming from like a similar, like playful place.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's almost like, I don't want to say childish, but there's like an arrested development about in horror that I cherish, or in myself, that I cherish.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean to say that I am refusing adulthood. It just means that I think through horror, I have found a way to carry childhood into adulthood. Because I believe it. For the duration of the movie, for the duration of the novel, for the duration of the scary soundtrack, I believe the experience.
Yeah.
And like my older brother doesn't. You know, he might get scared by a loud sound or something. But I'm like, oh my God, this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a kid's reaction to that.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's one of the like beauties of horror and rock and roll is that playful. I don't want to say childish. I got to work on this a little bit more. What I'm talking about, but somehow they're coming from the same exact spot to me.
Yeah, it's almost an innocence, but like yeah. No, I agree. I agree with that.
Except for Jack Ketchum. Everyone else is innocent.
Yeah. yeah. So I just wanted to brag about that for a minute. Let's go back to Daphne. So, we had a conversation right after I read Daphne, and you were telling me about this conversation you'd had with another author about how usually you'll go into a book and you'll have these kind of like landmark moments that you know you want to hit.
Yeah.
And that you had this conversation where you were like, "What if we just started at those?"
So
can
it was,
you talk more about
yeah,
that?
It was with John Langan. So I read The Fisherman, and I had never talked to him before, and I wrote him online. I'm like, "Can I call you about this book?" And he was like, yeah. And we talked for like an hour. He's amazing. I'm sure, Tony, you know him.
Yeah.
And some other people here know him. Like, God, what a dude. What a dude. And anyway, but we were both talking about how we will start a book with like three or four like scares in mind. And then we'll like space them out in the book. And it's like, wait a minute. And he told me with The Fisherman, he was like, wait a minute. Why don't I just front load them and then have to come up with more scares, you know? And I was like, right, that's the way. Why are we doing this? Like saving this moment for later on? No, let's try to one up ourselves the whole time.
And I think when you were on the podcast for Pearl, and you were like, "I'm working on this. I'm working on this this short story or this novella, but I think they want me to make it a full novel. That was Daphne, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my next book is called Spin a Black Yarn, and it's a collection of like novellas that take place in Samhain.
Awesome.
And it opened with, I mean, this was in rudimentary stages. It opened with Daphne. Because again, I thought it'd be awesome to open with a fastball.
Yeah.
And then we can get as weird as we want.
Yeah.
But then when I sent it in, the roughest of rough drafts, Trisha Del Rey was like, no, this should be your next novel. And I'm like, really? And then she sent a few ways or examples how that can be. And I was like, oh, shit.
You can swear. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, shit, Trisha. You're totally right. This is a book.
Yeah. Yeah. God damn it. I don't know if the person is here, but there was someone I was talking to recently. I hand-sold Daphne. And, like, the next day, they were like, I haven't even met her yet, and I'm having nightmares.
Oh, no.
Awesome.
That's great. You guys are going to love it. Basketball. Basketball
yeah.
plays a huge role in this book. Why is basketball important to you?
I don't know. Maybe because my dad introduced it to me. I don't know. Like, me and my brothers have played it our whole lives with my dad. I'm from Detroit, and in the 80s, the Pistons were amazing, and so were the Celtics and Lakers. So were the fucking Celtics. And but in Detroit, the Bad Boys were, like, the greatest thing ever. And there was one year when I went with my dad to every single home game that year. So, like, there's been, like, a soft spot in that way, and... It's a game I just know better. Like, I don't know football. Like, I love football, like watching it, but I've never played. I would have got, like, crushed, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, baseball, I was afraid of the ball. So, anyway. So, tennis, I was afraid of the ball. Ping pong, I was afraid of the ball. So, basketball, I was like, yeah, let's use. And I tried one a while ago. I tried, like, the first book I ever wrote has, like, a moment... like a scene with a basketball practice and stuff, and I was always looking for like an angle, just like I was always looking for an angle like, with anxiety on, in a book, and those all came together with this one.
Yeah. I love the, so again, for those of you who haven't read it, it opens with Kit Lamb. They're asking the rim a question, and if you make the shot, it's gonna come true. And I won't, you know, we're not gonna, no spoilers, but, how superstitious are you?
Oh my god.
In real life.
Oh my god. Yeah. I wish Allison was in the studio. Like, I won't let an, if Allison and I walk down the street, if anything comes between us, like anything, I have to say bread and butter to keep our energy together. Unless we were having a bad time, then let the thing, now I'll intentionally walk by like a, you know, like a bike or something that's in the, you know. You walk on that side, I'll walk on this side. Let's start this over. There are so many of these,
yeah.
It's like insane, but not like in a OCD way.
Yeah. Not entirely.
And it's more like in a really awesome, I'm right way.
That's legit.
Like, I have a copy, I haven't read the book, Richard Layman's, it was a big one, something, Traveling Vampire Show. I've had that book in, like, the pocket stairwell, whatever it's called, in the door well of the car of ours.
Yeah.
For, like, since we bought it, because I put that in there for the first time we drove it, and I was like, well, nothing bad happened. That thing is still, it's in there right now, traveled all the way from Detroit to here.
Incredible.
And it's so
and
gross.
And it kept you safe the whole way.
Yep.
So thank you to that book.
Hey, it did. Now I'm afraid to read it. You know, just let whatever. I have a great relationship with that book. Let's just leave it.
We probably have a copy here. We'll just get you a copy. Yeah. All right. You have written a bajillion books, which I know because I own them all. What is your process like, and do you sleep ever?
Yeah, Allison doesn't sleep, but I do. So... it's not like there's no uniformity. Are there? There's a lot. I know Tony. And are there like a lot of writers in the house?
Yeah.
There's no uniformity overall, but
yeah.
There is book to book.
Okay.
So Bird Box was done. The first session was 7 a.m. Well, I woke up at 7. It was 8 a.m. till like noon,
mm-hmm.
every day till it was done. 8 a.m. 8 till noon.
Wow.
The most recent one, Incidents Around the House, was 8 at night till midnight.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Wendy, my first book, was midnight till 4 a.m. Every session started at midnight. I don't know what that is, but it seems like once you get it started, for me, once it's started, every day till it's done. I don't care if it's good, bad, right, wrong. I don't wanna risk losing it.
Yeah.
I don't wanna risk like it slipping through my fingers or something.
Yeah, you're
so get the rough draft done. So like no, it's not like, you know, every day I write from noon to four. But
yeah.
In and of himself, each of the 36 books have been uniform in and of themselves. Also the word count. So Bird Box was about 4,300 a day. But the newest one was 2,500. Unbury Carol was 5,300.
Oh,
but I tried one at 500 because, man, I saw online that Paul Tremblay and someone else wrote 500 a day, and I'm like, how the fuck do you only write 500?
Yeah,
paragraph. I could, yes, I know. I was like, what? And I wrote him about it. I'm like, you only write 500 words a day? And he was like, oh, you know, I really, you know, I'm very particular. And I'm like, well, I can tell, but still.
Yeah, he's a math teacher,
so I was like, all right, you know, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna write 500 a day. It was brutal, but I did it. I did it for the whole thing to see what it was like. It's probably the worst book I ever wrote. It's like the most stilted, boring thing. It's like, I would be, the sessions were 15 minutes long.
That's
I talked to Paul about that after. I'm like, I'm never fucking doing that again.
Yeah.
And I was also like, but now you have to do one at 4,000.
Oh my God. Jumping from 500 to 4,000. That's like when you're doing NaNoWriMo and you miss a few days and then all of a sudden you're like, oh no!
Yeah, exactly. But I would like to see someone that's like a sharpshooter.
Yeah.
Like, throw up on the page.
Yeah.
Like, I'm interested in what would come out of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So you forced yourself to stop after 500 words.
It was awful. Yep.
That's terrible.
Yeah. And then I have a friend named James. I hope that every writer has a friend named James. No. that we update each other what we're writing every day. So I'll be like, I'm 400, you know, words in today, or blah, blah, blah. I did this much today. And every day I would write him like, I'm done already. Like, oh God, James, this is awful, you know? And we just, it lasted like 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's insane. Yeah, don't do that again.
Yeah, I'm never gonna do it again.
But jumping off of that, do you have, because there are a few writers in the room, do you have like advice that you like to give about writing?
Yeah, of course. I think for me, it was the day, because you'll hear sort of like these platitudes or something, right? But this one took root with me, which is like, it doesn't matter if the rough draft is good or bad. It just doesn't matter. Because, okay, Bird Box got sold to HarperCollins. And then I rewrote it from scratch after that. So it's almost like a philosophical question. Like, what book did they buy, right?
Yeah.
And it's, I wrote from scratch. Like, from, except for the birth scene. I wrote it from scratch, like, beginning to end. So, like, what really happened there, right?
Yeah.
So what that says to me is that that rough draft had enough spirit and energy for it to get, I guess, sold or something.
Yeah.
But it also wasn't the book in the end, so who cares how right or wrong it was?
Mm-hmm.
And then once that actually takes root, that you don't, it doesn't matter how good or bad the rough draft is, well, then you can be fucking anything.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to fix it later.
Right.
The problem with this philosophy, brutal rewrites.
Oh.
Brutal rewrites. And I had read Joe Lansdale was talking about it. He edits as he goes. It's one draft, you know, that he sticks with the whole time. I tried one like that. Well, I tried two. I did Mallory like that and Carpenter's Farm, I guess you can argue it's like that.
Yep.
And there's something to me, it's like the rough draft should just be like, just sort of a joyous, like, I gotta get this out.
Yeah.
I gotta get this out. We'll fix it later, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Kind of like even this conversation, I'm like, I just want us to like we're rapping,
yeah,
rather than having some like pre.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we could rewrite this conversation later, and it would be brutal.
I don't want to. Don't send me up for that. The amount of lack of motivation I have for like editing podcast episodes, and I don't even do that much editing. But it's like I wait till like 12 hours before it's supposed to go up because I'm like, I don't want to. So. Joe knows.
Yeah,
just my co-host.
I'm the one laughing.
Just my co-host, so Joe knows. Rewrites sound like true terror.
Yeah, but it's also, but hang on though, because it's also you see yourself getting better.
That's true.
And so like there's a beauty, there's a holy cow beauty to that also, where
yeah,
it's like every sentence is getting better in the rewrite. So there's like,
yeah,
while it's like, oh gosh, it's so taxing, but it's also so rewarding.
Yeah.
But nothing, for me, nothing beats that initial go around.
Yeah.
And I recently, okay, Ryan, my manager, and I had a meeting with like a director. And the guy was saying like what he's into, and I'm like running through like all the books that are stories that have been published and stuff, and you know, in my head and blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, oh God, I think this guy would like a book of mine that I haven't rewritten yet. It's just in my office. And so at some point in the meeting, I was like, hey, Mickey, I think you might like this book of mine called Pest. And Ryan, you could see Ryan like, what? Like, the hell is Pest?
What is this?
And then I was like, you know, blah, blah. And then Mickey was like, yeah, send it to me. And I'm like, oh, shoot. What do I do now? I need to rewrite this really fast. So I was like, okay, just screw it. Just send it to him.
Yeah.
And he called me. He loves it. We've been talking about it for a while. He's already written a script for it, whatever. Awesome. The point is, the rough draft has had the spirit,
yeah.
Had the scenes. Even the film side doesn't need like the exact... They're going to change your book anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So when you start to like think of the rough draft in those terms,
yeah.
It's so liberating.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Speaking of adaptations a little bit, is it weird to have your books adapted?
Yeah, I mean...
That's got to be weird, right?
Yeah, but
you're
it's like...
I wrote that, but I didn't write that.
No, yeah, yeah. Yeah, there is like this side of you that you go, I didn't say that, you know? I almost feel like Larry David. I didn't say that, you know? It's like you always want to like yell at someone. It's like... like you reversed those two words. It was so much better before. So much more poetic. You totally missed it. Bird Box, the movie, is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me, you know, aside from my kids. I don't have any kids.
Yeah.
And then... And so, for me, it's like some people ask, like, did you like that movie? I'm like that movie. It, like, changed my life. Like, yeah. Yes, I liked it. I don't even know if that movie's good or bad or whatever.
Yeah.
I think playing in a band, and I think we talked about this.
Yeah.
Playing in a band, yeah, like, we've talked about all this.
We talk a lot.
Playing in a band, I bring the songs to my best friends. I don't tell Derek what to do on the drums. I don't tell Chad what to do on the bass. So it's like the same exact thing. Like, I wrote the song Bird Box, and Netflix and Sandra Bullock play the music.
Yeah.
And take it away. And some of the songs, do I think the high string, some of the songs we went the wrong way? Yeah, who cares? Let's do another one. Yeah. And so same thing like with the movie. Do I feel like some things are wrong? Yeah, but it was amazing. Let's roll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just so desperately want the Goblin show. It's all I want.
That would be a delicate one. So I wrote the pilot episode, though. I did. I think I told you. Yeah.
And I've just been sitting on that information in my brain, like, someday.
Yeah. I want to write a sequel to Goblin.
Yes.
That'd be
please.
Fun.
A Return to Goblin.
A Return to Goblin. With Walter Camp, like, hugging, like, a palm tree and his hair blowing in the wind. A Return to Goblin.
If you guys haven't read Goblin yet, it might be my favorite.
Thanks.
Of the Malamans.
So that book started as, there was a list I had of 10 novellas, and I was like, this is going to be amazing, this is going to be like 1,000 page, you know, in this city. I made it to 6, and I just ran out of gas. I was like, nah, screw it. But what that means is, there's 4 others that are sitting there, and have been sitting there for a while. So every now and then I'll eye that list.
I'm very excited about this. Before we open to Q&A, what's the thing you're proudest of that you've done?
Artistically?
Anyway.
Oh, come on. Anything? No, I can't answer that.
All right, fine. Artistically. I like to put them on the spot.
No, that's a great question, though. I feel like more people should be able to answer this, right? Probably the first one.
Yeah.
Because I had failed at writing a novel 4 times prior, which only means, to me, failed only means didn't finish them.
Mm-hmm.
So to go for it is 5th time, and we're talking over like a decade, and you're like, I'm going to get it this time. Like, you're 10 years deep into not getting it.
Yeah.
Like, I think, and then to actually make it to page 280, and I was in a coffee shop, oh my God, I was in a coffee shop, and I like stood up from, it was a coffee shop of all law students.
Okay.
So everyone else there was like totally studying for the bar. And this was midnight to 4 a.m. at this all-night place. And I like leapt out of my chair. I was like, oh my God, I know how it ends. I know how it ends. I'm going to finish a book right now.
Aww.
And I was like freaking out, so excited. So I think Wendy would probably be, and there's not so many proper names books. I don't know why this. Those are just the ones that have come out so far. But anyway, Wendy. Yeah, I feel like just that would be the thing that I'm proudest of, and I would say that any writer should be proudest of is that they're the voice that was like, you can do it.
Yeah.
Because like, no one, you know, no one's necessarily telling you that. Even if, well, that's not true. A lot of people do tell you that, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm starting to spiral. The next question.
Yeah. No. Let's open it up to Q&A. Who's got questions?
So how tempting is it to, so when you look at, read a horror book, like you look at some of Stephen King's or you, like Justin Cronin's The Passage trilogy, how hard is it not to go down that path of just like writing everything that's on your mind? What I notice about your books, they're very tight. Like, you get to 300, I can read that book in a couple of weeks, and I don't feel like I have to dedicate an entire season to the book. What is it? Is it your style, or is it just a temp? Is it what you owe to your readers? You're like, I owe them a story that gets to the point.
Well, no one has ever asked me that question. So my fiance Allison only reads fantasy like series and stuff, and she read Daphne, and she was like, that was like a short story. She was like, that book could have been four times longer. And I'm like, dude, you read 1,000-page novels like all the time. That's all you read. She's like, no, that one can't. And then she's like, oh yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah. I think since day one, I've seen them as like episodes of a TV series that I'm the host of, right? So I'm Rod Serling, and Bird Box was episode one, you know? And I always saw Bird Box as sort of like a black and white episode. I don't know why, but I did. Unburied Carol was like the Western episode. Black Man Wheel was, I guess you could say, like army or band or whatever. And I've like always like kind of seen them that way, and I think that for that there's a sense like get to the point or something. So I guess you would say it's style, but then Ghoul in the Cape is crazy. And
Ghoul
that
Cape is bigger than I am.
Ghoul in the Cape is 300,000 words. I think that at, maybe with what you're saying, like there, I had a moment where I was like, hey man, let's just see what it's like to throw everything in. You know, and I loved it. I freaking loved it. And I love reading giant books. I just read 11/22/63, and it's one of the greatest books I've ever read in my entire life.
Good.
I couldn't even believe it. Yeah. And then, so I love that kind of thing. But when maybe it's again the band. I hesitate to use the word pop song because that makes it. That's like a. I don't know. That's dangerous to say a pop novel or something. But there is a sense of like get to it or something. Get to it, and then like make the change and. And, you know, even if it's, like, a weird book, like let's get to it or something. So I guess it's just style.
And Pearl and that eye scare the hell out of me.
Oh, awesome. I almost spoiled that whole book just now, but okay.
Yeah, no. No spoilers. Y'all should bring Pearl.
That book was a really hard book to explain to someone. Like, because I would be, like, at the bar, and people would be like, what are you working on now, Josh? And I'm like, oh, my God, it's unbelievable. This telepathic, like, pig. And then, like, and then eventually the entire, like, city is in his, like, mental web, but his mental web is, like, sludgy. He's just realizing the power of his, like, that day, and everyone's like, all right.
And
that
I'm over here, a
that
bookseller.
One's going nowhere.
I'm like, oh, yeah, I made it my staff pick, so, evil telekinetic pig, just trust me.
That sounds bizarro, but it's not.
It's not. No, it's great. It's
well,
great. And I successfully canceled it a bunch, so. Yeah.
Thank you.
It worked. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, thanks.
Who else has questions?
Influences.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I think one of the names on this list is going to probably sound bad, but for years when I was younger, it was the prolifics like Woody Allen, like Stephen King, like Alfred Hitchcock, like Agatha Christie, like Bob Pollard from Guided by Voices, like people that were putting out work like regularly or books or whatever regularly, but they each had like their own flavor, their own. It never feels with Guided by Voices that they're like phoning it in or something. And Hitchcock, each one felt like he like gave his all, and all those anyone that like operated that way. I think that. More like that approach, like thrilled me more than anything else. I was already, you know, in fifth grade trying to write a novel. So to encounter these like artists that had like found a way to, Jesus, do that for 50 years or something, and like two a year or whatever it is, and you make 50, 60 movies, and I started to see it as what's the right phrase? It's not like each book. Each book doesn't have to represent you in full. Each movie doesn't have to represent Hitchcock in full. It's the body of work that will represent you in the end. And that was the biggest influence to me. It was like, because that liberated me to say, well, this story, you know, I don't have to say everything about me in this story. I don't have to say my whole worldview. And if you write enough of them, you can even write a book that you don't agree with at all. And I think that, so something in encountering the like prolifics, like those, anyone in that realm, like really, really thrilled me.
You had a question. I was curious about why the title change for On This
Yeah,
Day of
Glory. It was a bad idea. It was my idea. It was my idea. I don't know why. On This Day of the Pig came out, limited edition, Cemetery Dance, and then a few years later, Del Rey asked to put it out wider with Goblin and House Bottom of the Lake, and I was like, oh, maybe we should change the title. Like, this is the stupid... to the proper name Pearl. I had one of the greatest horror titles ever. On This the Day of the Pig, and I was like, let's change it to, you know. And a lot of people online will write like, I like the other title. I'm like, I do too, I know. I know, I made a mistake, all right? It should be On This the Day of the Pig. And for now on, I'll just call it that. But whatever.
Other questions? What's your favorite slasher?
Oh, I love The Burning.
Ooh.
That, you know,
okay.
You know the
canoe
scene in The Burning? That's
yep.
One of my favorite scenes of all time. But I mean, the first ones I ever saw was Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
So, and it was great. Me and my friend watched like the first four in one day or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. And again, you know, that character, wow. Because, yeah, because... he's as elastic as it gets.
Yeah.
Like, anything can happen. He's kind of like Anthony from Twilight Zone, the movie.
Yeah.
And the
yeah.
show. Because it's like, literally anything goes. Anything Anthony imagines he can do to his family or anyone he, like, lures into his house or whatever. Even if that is even a house. And same thing with Freddy. Like, nothing's real. Literally anything goes. But somehow remains tight under this umbrella of, like, it's a dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Versus like extending into like absurdism.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Freddy is a real brilliant, like Wes Craven, like. Whew.
I love Freddy.
Yeah.
We're due for some new Freddy, I think.
Yeah.
Did you have a question?
I think you and I have talked about this before. Actually, I know we have. What do you think is the ultimate art form? I know we've talked about this. And why?
Yeah.
Will you ever be brave enough to do it?
I don't know. The stand-up comedian
yeah.
is the ultimate art form. Because you don't have the drummer to hide behind or to ride. That sounded weird. Sounded exciting, then, actually. I'm going to text Derek after. Hey, Derek, how are you? You don't have the drummer to ride. You don't have the bass player that's like, you know, maybe if they don't like you, maybe they'll like the other singer, whatever. You don't have the cinematographer to set the mood. You don't even have the distance of, like, I wrote this novel and now you read it when I'm not around. You know, like, the stand-up comedian is alone on stage. Not only that, but, like, there to just make you laugh. Would I ever do that? Whew. If I did it, I would want it to be all, like, one story. Whether it was 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. One story that just kept getting weirder and weirder and hopefully funnier and funnier. Would you do it?
Hopefully.
You've done it.
No. I have
you have not done it, but you want it.
I want to.
Yeah.
I have a comedy notebook, which is
the
saddest, dumbest thing.
Wait, that's amazing.
Where
man.
It's like, this is my tight 10. And I'm like, what does that even mean? Until I saw The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel like one too many times,
no,
so I'm like, I'm going to do that.
It's so good.
That's
me. So if you do that, I would love to be there or see it or however you gotta do it.
I mean, if you do it, let's.
Oof.
What if,
God, talk about anxiety, man.
I mean, what about like next time you have a book launch, we set something up at like Hatbox Theater and do like for a comedy night.
What if every horror author had to do stand up? Like that would be rough. I'm trying to think of the ones that would be good at.
Mine would involve a pencil in the eye, I can already say that.
Yeah.
I already know the story.
Yeah, I don't know if I could do it. I think that a lot of us would be throwing up backstage. And
yeah.
I think only a handful of us would actually go through with it. A lot of alcohol.
A lot of alcohol. Cool. That's a good question. Any others? Yeah?
Okay.
I have to know. Are you gonna make us disappear?
Oh man. Who wants to disappear? What?
Nah.
I do. That's the best question ever. Thanks for that.
All right.
Wait, have we been talking for a while already?
I think so. I
have a question.
Oh yeah, go for it.
So if Daphne was going to be made into a film, who would you want to play Daphne?
An actual 7-footer.
Shaquille O'Neal.
Gwendolyn. Shaquille O'Neal. Or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Robert Parrish. God, what a great question. Because what if I could get like Rebecca Lobo to play? She's not 7 feet, but what if I could get Rebecca Lobo to play that? Oh my God. That has been option. And the writer of Malignant and Megan is attached to write it. And she's unbelievable. Her name's Akela Cooper, and it's the best pitch I've ever, like, I don't really love that word, but it's the best I've ever seen in my life. When we were, like, went to studios with it, she was so funny and so good. I was like, this is going to get picked up. And then it did. She was, like, incredible. So she's attached to write it.
Excellent. Yep. Very good news.
Yeah. I will ask her who she sees in mind, but I think for sure, like, a giant... awesome woman. Like Mom, will you play Daphne? You're a giant awesome woman. You always will be. Even though you're only 5 feet tall, you're still a giant awesome woman to me.
Perspective can do marvelous things.
Oh, I love that.
Any others before we start wrapping up and get to signing? Yeah.
I guess it's I just saw Bird Box the other night, the movie with my wife, and just listening today, it sounds like some of your characters and plots are really unique, but do you wind up spending a lot of time developing things and saying, oh my gosh, that's a complete cliche and out it goes? Or
yeah. I do, but then I worry that you gotta be careful that you're not being like far out for far out's sake or something. You know what I mean? Like I'll have that, there's that, a lot of moments in the office where it's like, are you saying no to this like for the right reasons? And are you saying yes to this for the right reasons? Usually if you're saying yes for the right reasons. You know, but when you're saying no, it could be because you're embarrassed. It could be because you're like, you know, scared that you can't do that. Like, I've had ideas that I'm like, I can't do that fucking research. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That would be me. I'd be like, I don't want to do
no,
this.
No, and I'm like, I know I've had like ideas about like a doctor. I'm like, no. No freaking way am I writing about that. No, I gotta know everything about that. And then Alice would be like, well, you just learn like 5 or 6 terms. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Because if we just throw in like a few, but you know, it doesn't work. So, yeah, that stuff does cross my mind. Because like, I don't know. Yeah. I think but as you can tell, it makes me almost uneasy to say that or something. Because that's like a real, you're in the office moment and something crosses your mind, you're like, yeah, that's cheesy. Or you'll be like, oh, that's trite or this or that. But then I'll read somebody else do it and I'm like, I wish I did it. You know, like a home invasion, you know, like a really good one. You know, and most of them are really good. And I'm like, why don't I write a home invasion? I'm like, I don't know. But, you know, but in the office, I usually say no to myself.
What are you working on next?
So it's called Incidents Around the House. Mm-hmm. And it started, or the idea came from like 15 years ago where my brother, his kid is now 18, so he was 3. And Ryan was putting, Ryan and his wife were putting Finn to bed. And Finn said goodnight, and then Alyssa said, goodnight, Finn, and then Finn said goodnight again. And then Alyssa said, you already said goodnight. And Finn said, I'm saying goodnight to other mommy.
Nope.
And Ryan told me this story, and I was like, dude, what did you do? He's like, what do you mean what I do? I just, like, we laughed and went to bed. I'm like, no, what? Like, who's other mommy, man, you know? So for like 15 years, I tell that story at the bar. I'm like, oh my God, my brother, that's the scariest thing I've ever heard. And then finally, I'm like, I'm going to write that story. So I wrote it a couple months ago, and the whole thing is narrated by the 6-year-old.
Awesome.
Which that, if anyone... Hey, Tom.
How are you?
Hey, if anyone here has ever written a book like from that perspective, it's crazy, because you can't even say, like, You have to neuter yourself. So, like, you can't even say, like, mom sat beside me on the couch. No kids sat beside me.
No.
You know what I mean? There might not even be, like, mom's on the couch, or mom sat down, or mom sat, or mom, you know, whatever it is. Beside me, on the, even the littlest thing like that, you're like, when you go through it again, you're like, oh, no, don't use it. Even, like, a precocious kid wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was actually just an excuse to not have to write very well.
Spooky children. Man, I mean, you know, I have two spooky children, so
yeah.
I'm all about...
Okay,
I'm
wait, one more thing about that, though. So, the exciting thing about writing that book is that, because anytime I'm watching a haunted house story, it's like, why don't they leave, right? So they do. And so it's called Incidents Around the House, but it's around every house they go to and all the friends' houses. And so, like, almost every scene is at, you know, friends' homes where they don't tell them what's going on, because eventually you're like, hey, we spend the night, you know? And they all have, like, beards. Well, they all have beards. The 6-year-old has a beard. They're all with circles under her eyes. That's a funny movie idea. But they're like, yeah, so they're, like, on the freaking run. And then eventually it's like, if it's following us, we may as well go back home. Mm-hmm. But back home is where it started, so that it's sort of a into trying to outrun this haunting.
I love that. I almost decked my 5-year-old recently because I walked into her room and she's the spooky kid, and I couldn't find her. She wasn't in her bed. She wasn't over by her sister. The room's not that big. I was like, where is this child? And then I saw two little feet poking out from, like, inside the closet. And I, like, moved the curtain aside, and she was, like, in, like, the, like, back of the closet.
Oh, no.
Just.
No.
No.
And then she, like, looked up at me and, like, mumbled something creepy.
No.
And I was like, go to bed. And I put her in bed, and I turned around, and my 2-year-old, who never wakes up quietly, she's, like, she wakes up, and she wants the world to know that she's awake. And I turned around, and she was standing in her crib watching us, and I was like...
You have to burn the house down.
I was like, Cordelia, you're too scary. And she was like, sorry, mommy. And I was like, don't do that again. Ugh, these children.
Allison always tries to scare me and succeeds. I'll just say, like, the freakiest one ever was... I've had this, like, kind of, like, big old desk that I've had forever. And I never realized how much room there was, like, under the desk until this day. Where I came into the office and I, like, sat down and I, like, started, like, writing, and a hand just goes. And I mean, I flipped, man. I had no idea that she was down there. Like, I sat down, I didn't, like, touch her, you know? Oh, I was so scared. Yeah.
Terrifying. Yeah, I'm real brave when it comes to, like, reading horror books and watching horror movies, but anything in real life, no. No, thank you.
I have an awesome video to send you, another, like, freaky closet sort of, like, thing.
Oh, good. Can't wait. Awesome. Any other things you guys want to talk about?
This has been great. Talk about signing some books.
Yeah, should we get some?
But real fast, I want to thank you for everything you're doing for me and for horror, and it's truly, the whole scene knows about you, and we all, like, talk about you, me and Jans and others talk about you, and
shucks.
And my brother even called, and he's like,
hello,
he's like, you're meeting Ryan tonight, you know? Thank you. It's, like, truly, truly amazing what you're doing here.
Oh, thank you. Proving to my boss that people in New England love horror. He believes me, sort of.
All right, well, on that note, we're going to prove Ryan right. Thank you, everybody, for coming. If you already have a copy of the book, reach